Do you ever wonder how some people seem to rise faster and get noticed more? What if the key to moving ahead isn't just about what you do, but about a very specific role you play for someone else? In this episode, we'll reveal what that role is, why it's so powerful, and how embracing it can open doors you didn't even know existed. If you're ready to shift how you think about success, plus learn from a former startup CMO, keep listening. Let's get started. Welcome to Business Isn't Hard. Today, I'm joined by Joe Chernoff, a three-time CMO, seasoned startup advisor, and one of the most recognized leaders in B2B marketing. Joe is currently an executive in residence at Battery Ventures, where he works with the portfolio companies on marketing strategy and helps evaluate new investments. Before that, he was the CMO at Pendo, where he led a global marketing team, oversaw two strategic acquisitions, and generated over $1 billion in pipeline. Throughout his career, Joe has held senior roles at companies like Robin, Insight Squared, HubSpot, Eloqua, and Kinvi, building high-performing teams, launching top-ranked content programs, and consistently pushing the boundaries of what great marketing can do. He's also involved in organizations that support wildlife conservation, raising awareness on issues and impacts surrounding elephant poaching, shark finning, and more. Joe, it's an honor to have you on here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, you've done so much. Can you tell me a little bit how you've got here to Battery today?
Circuitously.
Yeah.
That's like the only answer. It's it was very circuitous. I've just sort of followed curiosities, and I had been a CMO, like you said, a few times over. And at this point in my career, I know that like that's my core skill, but I wanted to apply it in a different way. And when the Battery opportunity came around to spend some time advising portfolio companies and, you know, kind of dipping my toe in the water with potential new investments, getting to know those companies. So kind of going wider and more shallow versus narrow and really deep as CMO of, you know, one organization, I thought it would stretch me a little bit. You know, I'm 54, but I'm not done learning. And it felt like it was time to try something a little different.
Yeah. So if we start way back at the beginning, right, you went to school and you majored in Spanish and criminal justice, correct?
I did.
And from there you became CMO. How did that, what was your mindset coming out of college? Did you know what you wanted to do, or how did you,
I
what
thought
did you
I
think
did.
happened? Yeah.
So I'll tell you the story. It's kind of wild. I thought I was going to work for the federal government in a like a law enforcement capacity. I don't think I ever did an inventory of like what kind of person I am and what kind of values I have, because there's no way I was going to be successful at that role. There's zero chance, but it was like I never actually looked in the mirror. And I had an advocate. I had somebody sort of on the inside that was shepherding me through this process. And in the process, this person said, okay, and so I should assume that like you'd never done any drugs. I was like, well, not any hard drugs. She said, well, what about like marijuana? And I was like, well, of course. And she said, well, was it habitual? I said, how many times is habitual? And she was like, this isn't going well. I was like, well, answer the question. She said, six. And I said, in what span of time? And she said, you're done. I can't help you anymore. And
wow.
I was like, I hit a dead end street in that one conversation. And then I like, kind of picked up some of the pieces, and I worked in a advocacy role for a government organization, a crime advocate role. And it just wasn't for me. And then I had this real reckoning of, well, I studied these two very specific sort of disciplines, or at least one specific discipline. And I was 24 and had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do. And we're still no idea what I had credentials to do. And I went door to door, physically door to door. So it was like 2004, 2005. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I say I'm off by a decade. It was like 1994, 1995. I was 25. And I was knocking on doors and asking for an internship at PR firms. I figured I was always a good writer. It was one skill, even though I hadn't studied business or comms. And a firm hired me as an intern. And I was able to pull away from the pack a little in that role and found an advocate there. And you find somebody that believes in you and will champion you, and boy, your job is to make that person look good. And I think I got that intuitively. My job was to make my champion look good, and I think I did that. And so she was able to kind of buoy me a little bit and help me accelerate because I had a little bit of a late start.
Interesting. Yeah, your job is to make your champion look good. I never really thought about it that way. Was there a point, because I can kind of see now that you're getting closer to the marketing space. Did you ever have any like aha moment, like this is it? Or maybe just even like I really love to do this.
The closest thing to that was so the first chapter of my well second chapter first chapter was advocacy, second chapter was PR. I saw that PR was sort of cratering and social media was rising, and I found this company, Eloqua, subsequently IPO. I was there for the IPO, and what I realized was the companies at the time that were getting a lot of publicity were getting publicity not for the product that they sold, but for the reports they were publishing or the content they were creating. And I'm like a visual thinker. And so I drew, not artistic, so it was pretty kludgy. I drew how I thought PR was working. And I showed it to my boss. And I said, I don't want to be the PR person anymore. I want to run content, build a content program that ultimately achieves your PR goal, but in an indirect manner. And he was like, great, do it. And he was another champion I had. You're finally stepping stones, people that will back you, people that believe in you. And he was another one. And that drawing, that illustration, you could still find it online, I'm sure, of how content and publicity intersect became, we essentially turned that drawing into a piece of content or meta, and that became really viral. And it was my first kind of breakout success, and it really helped the company. It cemented my reputation in that space, and that was the closest thing to an aha moment, because I was able to express the trend I saw, create content on the trend I saw, and see that content be really successful in a light bulb moment for others. That was probably the closest thing to a light bulb moment.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And before we kind of go further on your path, you've mentioned you've had a few champions up until this point. Is there any way to, I'm curious, can you expand a little bit on what it means to like make your champion look good?
Yeah, I look, I had a champion that literally said that to me. She said, your job is to make me look good, and my job is to promote you. And we had that conversation in, I don't know, 1996, and I still remember it. It's, 2025. You find somebody that believes in you. Dharmesh Shah, founder of HubSpot, co-founder of HubSpot, he said, your job is to make the people who believe in you look smart for believing in you. That's essentially the same thing, right? And you find somebody that becomes your advocate, and nobody should tell you it's your job to make them look good. You should want them to look good. So you want them to look good because they back the right person. So you become a good culture fit in the organization. Your job is to say yes to projects. You're not somebody that is an impediment to progress. You're not somebody that needs the credit for the success. You're somebody that you're willing to be the person behind the person, and you're willing to do what it takes to make that project or make that team or make that company successful, and just trust that recognition will come. Like in Hollywood, they say there's so little true acting talent out there, that if you are a talented actor, you'll be discovered. When, who knows, but you will be. And like, you just have to trust that good actor, that somebody that is backing the right project, somebody that says yes to projects, somebody that's a good team member, somebody that doesn't need the limelight, that eventually that is going to be recognized by the organization. If you have talented leadership, it will not take long for that to be seen, but you just have to have some faith that it'll be seen. And when it is, that's the person that backs you. Your job is to, continue to elevate them in the organization.
First of all, that's great advice, right? You have to trust that, if you are that talented person you want it, that it will be discovered. But on the other side, you have to, like you said, great leadership will see that. But I'm curious, you've worked for a lot of companies throughout your career, and I'm sure you've enjoyed a lot of them. How would you recommend spotting a company like that where you can really get promoted and find that champion, they'll recognize you?
I think capable leadership will recognize it. It doesn't have to be great leadership. Great leadership may just notice it faster, right?
Okay.
The mistake that people make is to try to force the hand of leadership to see how great they are. And those are people that seek the limelight and seek credit, and that backfires. There's a great haiku. Climb Fuji, surf snail, but slowly, slowly, right? The only way for that snail to climb Fuji is slowly. And so trust that'll be discovered. How do you recognize it? This is, people say like, winners never quit and quitters never win. Winners quit all the time. They just quit bad matches. They quit bad teams. They quit bad companies. So I would say that if it's not actively bad, give it a shot. Trust that there's capable leaders. And if a year goes by, 2 years go by, and you feel stalled, you're not being recognized, and you feel that you are a team member, you're not seeking the limelight, but people that seek the limelight are getting credit and getting moved ahead, that's probably leadership that's not paying close enough attention. So they just see the bright signal. They see the person in the limelight. They don't see the real person doing the work. That's an organization that I would think twice about staying in. Winners quit all the time. They just know why they're quitting and know when to quit. So I would say that if you feel that recognition is mounting, you feel like you're getting looks, right? You may not get the promotion on the timetable you want, but you're getting looks. People are recognizing you for the work you're doing. Well, like, stick that out. Allow that to marinate a little bit longer. Don't be in such a rush. Climb Fuji, surf snail, but slowly, slowly, right? Reputations are built slowly. They're not built in an instant.
Yeah, I think that's huge, right? I mean, your reputation, I mean, it comes down to your reputation, like for you, right? Once you had that viral drawing, all of a sudden that, as you said, cemented you in that space. And so it's about building that, but like you said, slowly. And so going back to your time at Eloqua too, I think I remember you talking to Bill Bench, who was on the podcast a few episodes ago, but you said that Eloqua was the time, or like kind of one of the like almost like a golden era in your career. Was that right? What was that like for you, like to really hit your stride?
I think of it as where does your mind wander when you're driving without the radio on, or when you're, taking a shower or going out for a run, right? In your idle time. And at that period, all of my thoughts were on how I could be successful in this company and how I could make this company successful. I was out for my anniversary, and I was messaging the CEO and my boss an idea I had. And I said, "All right, I have to go really quick. My wife's on the way back from the bathroom. I shouldn't be working right now." I was really like, I had an internal motivation that could not be supplied externally, right? It's like a, an athlete's drive, where they're up at 4 in the morning, not because their parents tell them to get up at 4 in the morning and work out, but because they want to be up at 4 in the morning working out because they know somebody else is. And I really had that drive at that time. And I don't know what it was. It was like I was in a career change. I was moving from PR, and I wanted to move into social media and marketing. I had a boss that really believed in me, and he gave me a good budget and a long leash. And we became friendly, Brian Carden and I. And so I had like, I knew he was my advocate, my champion. I wanted him to look good. And I had a CEO that was like, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it up, kid. I like it. And so like the big boss noticed, and I liked being, on on his radar. And he really became that CEO, became one of my first true mentors, which meant a lot to me. All the stars aligned. I was doing work I believed in. I believed in the company. And like when things line up like that, just know it doesn't happen all the time. Like a player that wins the World Series in their rookie year, they think those World Series just keep coming. And they're awfully hard to get to. And to have the stars align and to be in a job that the work you're doing speaks to you personally, the recognition is on a human level, like people believe in you. And people trust you, recognize that that's rare, and don't lose that one.
I love that. I think that's really the ultimate goal for all of us, I mean, for to have something that you're that passionate about, that's working for you, that you just love doing, and like you just wake up thinking like, I can't wait to do this more.
And don't screw it up by asking for promotions early. You suddenly look like you're self-interested, and you suddenly look like this is a transactional relationship between the company and you. Eloqua fell apart for me when I got too big for my britches and I started making demands on the company. And all of that, like people believe in me and wanted to see me successful, that started to decay, and it was my fault. It started to decay because I was turning it into transactions. I had some success. I wanted a piece of it. I asked for more options. I asked for more money. I asked for a new title. I asked for this and that. And I kind of ruined it.
Interesting. Wow. So if you had to go back, would you just keep chugging along? I mean, I guess you were kind of not in your prime, but you were in a place where all the stars aligned. Is there anything you would do differently?
I would have been more selective in the demands I made, and I would have given assurances with each time I made an ask. So I wouldn't have had expectations, and I wouldn't have made it like, I never made it an ultimatum, but the subtext was an ultimatum. They felt like I was saying it without saying it. And I would not have turned it into almost an adversarial posture. I would have found a way to talk to leadership about what role they wanted to see me grow into, ask them for a path there, make that their responsibility, tell me how to get there, and then agree on what it would look like, my success would look like for me to enter that role. What do I need to achieve? And then I would have the expectation that when I achieve those things, I would be awarded that role, but it would be a collaborative process. It wouldn't be, I essentially made demands, and I've always regretted it. It's always like I look back in that time with Eloqua fondly until I recall that I kind of effed it up.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Interesting. Yeah, I like your take on how it should be a collaborative approach, right? You're working with the leadership and you're kind of coming to those conclusions together, and then they're on board with it. And so now, jumping forward to today, obviously you've done so much, and kind of like you said in the beginning, you've gone from a really niche and then deep position in one company to now looking at a lot at a like a little bit more shallow, but it'll across a lot of companies. What is it? Do you have a preference for one or the other? Is it just different?
I couldn't do what I'm doing now had I not essentially grown up the way I did. As Bill said to me once when we were talking about this role, he said, you don't find these roles, they find you. And I wouldn't have the credibility to talk to founders and CEOs and CMOs. I wouldn't be heard in the same way if I didn't have the wins in my history that I have. They check the back of your baseball card before they take your call, right? They want to know that this is somebody that's seen what I am aspiring to see. They've seen the type of growth that I'm trying to accomplish. And so I do feel that that experience in multiple companies and several of them being very successful and me having some role in that success, that was a prerequisite for this role. What do I like more? I don't know yet. I've only been doing this for about 6 months. It's different. The pace is different. There's an urgency when you are operating in a startup that is invigorating. Urgency is like thrust upon you. Here, I have to sort of make my own urgency because the pace is different. You don't invest in every company you talk to. And so you're the there's much more deliberation, it's much more selective, it's much more patient. And that's been the adjustment, is the pace of an investment firm versus the pace of a startup that they invest in. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out, to be honest with you, is like, do I need that urgency to occupy my drive time, to occupy my running time, to occupy my shower time, right? Do I need that to kind of force that, quiet hour contemplation? That's the source of any success I've ever had, has come from that quiet hour contemplation.
I mean, you certainly thrived in that, in environments where there was that sense of urgency. You've obviously spent pretty much all your time in startups for, as opposed to really large companies. For people who are graduating, for people who are kind of entering the business world, do you have any advice as to whether they should look at those larger companies with maybe a more structured training program, really built out brand name, or go for those startup companies who, have that sense of urgency, who you can, you have a relationship with the CEO even really quickly.
Like I said at the beginning, I pursued that career in government and law enforcement because I never looked in the mirror. I would have failed at that. The biggest blessing in my career is that I smoked too much pot in college. Otherwise, I would have gone down this path that would have led to colossal failure. So you just have to ask yourself, are you somebody that thrives in a little bit of chaos? Do you like that? Genuinely, like pencils down, nobody's listening, you're just talking to yourself. Do you like the lack of structure? Do you like when the game plan changes every few months? Or do you find that stressful? And, or would you find that stressful? And you have to ask yourself those sorts of questions. Do I feel like I'd be in a box if I go through a training process that teaches me to operate maybe efficiently, but exactly like everybody else in that training class, that we all come out as close to clones of one another as possible, but we're taught the right way to do something? Do I want to follow a protocol? Do I want to implement like a system that is indoctrinated, that I'm indoctrinated into, and learn that way and grow that way? I don't, that's up to you, right? By this point, I don't even get calls from those big companies. They have no interest in hiring somebody like me because that's just like not how I would thrive. But I can imagine my older son thriving in that sort of environment where he's given a system and he implements that system. It's not that one is better or worse, but like you've got to do a personal inventory and know environmentally, culturally, which one aligns with how you operate. That's the starting point. So that's the best advice I can give. I can't say go to a startup, it's more fun. It might be really stressful if you're somebody who likes order.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You really gotta, like you said, look in the mirror, right? And kind of understand where you're at. And I know earlier too, you mentioned you really enjoy it, you're still learning. I want to get into a little bit of a lightning round. And the first question is, what is your favorite business book or podcast?
It's a book called Switch, and it's written by Dan and Chip Heath, and it's about how to make change and how to make that change stick, how to drive change and how to make that change like durable. It's a fabulous book.
Interesting. No, I'll definitely have to check that out. Next question. What is your biggest pet peeve in business?
Executives who punch down.
Interesting. What do you mean by
So
that?
I think in the executive room, leadership should feel free to respectfully duke it out over big, hard decisions. But when leaders take that same duke it out attitude with people beneath them, I think it's a terrible, terrible leadership. So I really, my biggest pet peeve are executive bullies.
Interesting. And I have a follow-up question actually. Throughout your time at startups, obviously you had a lot of mentors and champions and CEOs who you enjoyed working with. Was there anything, if you had to point to something specific that stood out among like your favorites, what was it?
I really needed people to get to know me. I felt like if somebody believed in me, Joe, it was so motivating. And so it's part of why I would never last in a big company where I'm not like, people don't know me. That was really meaningful. I had this, I had some one personnel reviews in my career where I knew my boss thought about it. And I found those reviews, even when there was hard feedback, even though there was critical feedback, that the boss like spent time thinking about it. I can't tell you how much that little thing that I knew that they didn't just kind of rubber stamp it or go through the motions or say the obvious thing. That's what they had in common. Like they were trying to be a good leader. They didn't always succeed at it, but they were trying to get to know the team and to like motivate people on a personal level. And when I've given reviews and people have said to me, "Wow, you really thought about this," I do feel like I'm paying it forward in the way that some of my best leaders treated me.
Yeah, I love that. They're really getting time to know the people they work with, which I think is key. And speaking of getting to know people, what is your best networking tip?
Focus on the give. Really focus on, very powerful sentences. How can I be helpful to you? And so, you have people graduating from college. It's a stressful time. It's like one of the biggest transitions in life. I remember how stressed I was in that period. And the tendency is going to be like, to figure out a way to get at what can you do for me. But if you flip-flop it and you're like, how can I help you? Is there anything I can do to be helpful to you? They're not going to have heard somebody with that posture. You're instantly going to stand out because it's going to be arresting in that conversation because they're just not going to have met people in your stage of career that looked at it that way and that offered their time. When I went in that PR firm from a intern to a full-time employee, the first thing my boss asked me to do is to clean her desk, like physically clean her desk. So I just said, sure. And I got some, I don't know, spray cleaner and a rag. And she said, do you know why I hired you? And I said, not really. And she said, well, this. I said, because I cleaned your desk. She said, no, because you clean my desk and not complain about it. And the next thing she had me do is write a presentation for one of the GMs of Motorola. Same day. And so that no job too small, how can I be helpful to you? That was like, it's a really powerful trait to have, and it's uncommon.
Interesting. I love that approach. Yeah, if you can help, if there's any way you can help, people in those positions, I think it's huge. We'll end on this final question of the lightning round. What is your go-to method for handling stress? I know you've been involved in a lot of chaos throughout your career.
Workout is true, but cliche. Honestly, my like happy place that I go to is watching videos of my kids playing baseball and figuring out how I can be a better coach to them. So I'll look at something mechanical and figure out one thing they're doing wrong and then come up with a plan to fix that one thing. And I use ChatGPT for a lot of it. I'll submit videos of them to ChatGPT and ask for ChatGPT's analysis. And then, like, I'll try to break from whatever's on my mind professionally and turn that into my new job for 15 minutes or so. And then I can go back to work and start fresh.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for being on. We'll end with this one final question. Throughout your career, through your internships, Eloqua, Battery, everything, what has been the biggest key to your success as a CMO, as a leader, as Joe?
I think I have some guts. I've seldom been worried about being fired. And I haven't played it safe very often. And startups like that, big companies, less so. And so there's been a good match. So, in terms of something I've done, I think I've been ambitious and I've been risk-taking. But the real answer is luck has so much to do with it.
Really?
We like to believe that we create our own outcomes. Maybe we influence our own outcomes, but so much of our lives relies on luck. And, I've had some good luck.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for being on. This was great.
My pleasure.
That was Joe Chernoff, marketing guru and former CMO. Joe consistently found his way through his career by finding a champion. People who believed in him and lifted him up. The key here was his job in the relationship, to make his champion look good. It's important to remember that recognition will come, but only if you earn trust and do the work patiently. Don't get greedy. Capable leadership will recognize you soon enough. For now, focus on rewarding your champion for believing in you. Reputation and trust are built over time. Don't rush promotions or make demands. Instead, collaborate on growth plans with leadership. Oh, snail, climb Mount Fuji, but slowly, slowly. Ultimately, you want to get to a position that you love and can't stop thinking about. For Joe, his golden era came at Eloqua, when his passion and purpose aligned completely with his work. When your thoughts naturally turn to how you can make your company succeed, even in the quiet moments, that's when you hit your stride in the startup world. Finally, lead by actually taking the time for people. Joe's best leaders were those who took the time to understand him and give honest feedback. He could tell that they really put thought into him and his performance. That kind of leadership makes you feel seen. Thanks for tuning in. This week, I encourage you to try and think about who your champion is. Do you have one? If you do, great. If not, try and find one. From there, try and make them look good. You will be rewarded. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.